Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Curtis Rogers filling in for Jake Heaps today, already doing a miraculous job. He's just screaming. Are you out of breath?
I am. I don't know how Jake does that every day.
Jake, every single day, while the Open is playing, just so you guys know, screams at the top of his lungs, "Let's go!" And Curtis, I know you were trying to do your best Jake impersonation, and you did a great job, but now I'm worried you're winded. Are you too winded to talk about the Mariners?
I am winded, and we've got 3 hours left here on this Friday, but I think I can pick it back up for the Mariners.
Okay, it's a special Curtis and Stacy version of Jake and Stacy. So I think it's going to be a fun one. I'm very excited for today. Now, it's not just going to be us. We're also going to bring on the Groz at 11:30. We got Michael Bumpus joining us again. We haven't got enough of him. He's coming back on noon. We'll be talking about the addition of Alden Smith, what it means for KJ Wright, the Seahawks. We'll get into some Seahawks chatter then. Before we get to any of that, we are in for a great sports weekend. Phenomenal. Break out the hot dogs. Break out the baked beans, Curtis. Put the baked beans on top of the hot dog. Eat the hot dog with the baked beans on it, because here's what's happening. The Mariners, your Seattle Mariners, are in first place in the AL West and are taking on the hated Houston Astros tonight.
Stacey, if the Mariners sweep the Astros,
yes,
I will eat a baked bean hot dog.
Are you serious?
I am dead serious.
Mariners, listen to me.
If they can pull off this sweep and they go to what, 11-5?
Yes.
With the Dodgers
coming into town. Oh my God.
I will eat a baked bean hot dog just for you.
I don't know why you're acting like it's not good, but I digress. Let's go ahead and jump into the more important conversation. Actually, the less important conversation. It is about the Mariners, though. Not only is it going to be an absolutely beautiful weekend, we're going to be outside watching the Mariners take on the Astros. There is one thing you're a little bit upset about, though, Curtis.
Yeah. We don't get the main villains here.
Exactly. We needed the heel.
We absolutely do. There's no Jose Altuve. There's no Alex Bregman. Those are the two guys that the hate amongst baseball fans has been mostly geared towards over the last, 15 months or so in Major League Baseball. AJ Hinch already got his punishment. Jeffrey Luhnow, their GM, he already got his punishment. These two guys did not get theirs. Now, Carlos Correa is still in the lineup for the Astros this weekend. He'll be there. Save your vitriol for him. Save your booze for him.
No, it's going to be random guys that are getting
it. I know. Now you're getting Garrett Stubbs.
Poor Garrett.
Kyle Tucker. Who are these guys?
That's not what we wanted. Anyways, now let's talk about the Mariners' start to the season, because you pointed this out, and it's a good point. Don't overlook their accomplishments. We aren't even through the month of April. There are many people that would say, don't read into slash lines, much less records. Don't read into any of this. And you said, you know what, though? This isn't the same kind of good start the Mariners fans have seen and have been burnt by in the past.
Well, yeah, there was that start, the 13-2 start in the 2019 season, where everybody was like, oh, man, this is a historic start. These guys are winning 100 games
World
out of
Series.
Nowhere. And we all know how that season
ended. Unfortunately do.
That was a rough one to take. But this team, the 2021 Mariners, have something going for them that squad clearly did not in 2019. And that is, reinforcements are on the way for the 2021 ball club. We're getting Kyle Lewis back in a couple of days, at least according to Mariners GM Jerry DePoto, who joined Danny and Gallant yesterday prior to the doubleheader, saying that Lewis is on track to be back in the lineup for the Dodgers series Monday and Tuesday night. That's the reigning American League Rookie of the Year. You add him to this lineup, all of a sudden it's looking a little more, a little more respectable. That's not all. Jared Kelnick could be called up at any point over the next, couple weeks, because his year that, the Mariners have been so adamant to tack on to his club control, that is already vested. So he could come up at any second. Like, maybe now. Maybe
Who
now.
Who
knows when that could happen? I would say Kelnick and Lewis are two of the five best bats in the entire Mariners organization. You're adding those guys to a team that is already off to an 8-5 start. You could possibly add Logan Gilbert to this rotation, shore up the back end of it. There is reason to be excited over this team that the 2019 ball club did not have. There was, those guys, It was a very patchwork team.
And there weren't guys that were sticking around. No. You had Edwin Encarnacion. You had Jay Bruce.
Daniel Vogelback.
Exactly.
Guys who there was not a lot tied to in terms of the future of this organization. Where there are plenty of guys on this 2021 roster where you could see them in a Mariners uniform 2, 3, 4 years down the road.
What I'll also say in addition to that is you have guys that are playing and a type of play that is sustainable. For instance, you don't have guys that are playing at an uncharacteristically good level. I don't expect J.P. Crawford, nor would I expect, you know, he's your defensive guy, great shortstop. I'm not expecting him to come out and be your power bat and lead the team in hits, lead the team in homers, lead the team in runs, anything. What I would love is like maybe some more doubles this year, maybe some extra base hits this year.
Put in the gap.
But he's not the one that's leading your team.
No.
Evan White, you'd like to see more of, but he's not leading your team. He is looking kind of like he did last year. You're getting kind of the same from JP and Evan. The guys that are performing well are the guys you were hoping and expecting to perform well. It's guys like Kyle Seager, guys like Mitch Haniger. It's Ty France. You know what I mean? Those are sustainable somewhat slash lines for them. Like, these are guys that were expected to be leading your team, and they are.
Yeah, and I don't think you can expect them to come crashing back down to the earth, kind of like in that 2019 season, which we're probably going to be going back to a lot here as the Mariners continue to pile wins up. There were guys that got off to such a tremendous start that year that did come crashing back to the earth. Daniel Vogelback, for example, was an all-star that year and was barely above 200 by the end of the season. The guys who are performing the best right now for the Mariners, this is not out of the ordinary for them. Kyle Seager has always been this kind of player throughout his Mariners career. It's fluctuated a little bit. There were, you know, a couple seasons ago he was around 240, whatever. Mm-hmm. But he's back to what we kind of know Kyle Seager to be. Mitch Haniger, a year and a half away from the game, we didn't know what he was going to be like. Well, turns out he's back to what he was at his very best, and that is one of the best outfielders in baseball. When he was his healthiest, when he made the All-Star team back in 2018, that was an MVP candidate. That was somebody who finished in, I think, 11th place in MVP voting that year. So the guys that are performing well for this ball club, I mean, you absolutely can hang your hat on them. But, Stacey, yesterday after the game, after the Mariners had swept both ends of the doubleheader, there was a section of, I don't know if it was Mariner fans or just people trying to play the realist card, saying, well, it's just the Orioles. This Orioles team is going to be terrible this year. Mm-hmm. Like, you took 3 of 4 from a bad team. Okay, but why are we taking that away from the Mariners, where if a good team, let's say the team that the Mariners are going to be facing Monday and Tuesday, the Dodgers did the exact same thing. No one would take that away from the Dodgers because that's expected of them. Why are we not expecting the Mariners to do to bad teams what other good teams do?
Right, and we aren't equating the two. I am in no way, neither is Curtis, saying like, oh, the Mariners, just as good as the Dodgers. Instead, what we're saying is like, give credit where it's due and look for improvement. Don't try to deny improvement where there is improvement happening. Taking 3 of 4 from a bad team is what a better team is supposed to do. The Mariners are the better team. Do they have many steps to make? Yeah, I think both of us and all of you guys listening and DJ, who's on the board right now, all of us are going to be looking at both Houston and the Dodgers, these two upcoming series, as a bit of a measuring stick to different levels, with the Dodgers being the odds-on World Series favorite. As a measuring stick for where the Mariners are, but you have to then give them credit and look at them beating a bad team and saying, good, good. That's what I wanted to see. That is a step.
Absolutely. This Orioles team, it almost felt inevitable in some of these games in that series that the Mariners are going to come back, just based off of how we've seen them throughout the course of the first 2 weeks of the season. We saw it on opening day, down 6 in the 8th inning.
Yeah.
They'd storm back, tie it, win in extra innings. And we've seen it time and time again. That is a trait in this ball club, a young ball club, that is so encouraging to see. And I would imagine Scott Servais and Jerry DePoto kind of echo those sentiments, because that's something that isn't necessarily in every player. I think that is something that is, you know, that ability to come back when your backs are against the wall. I think that is something that trickles down from the leadership in place. And to see that over the first couple of weeks of the season is incredibly encouraging. And, you know, don't overlook what the Mariners have done so far.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not the 13-2 start, but there is, I think, more to be encouraged by over these last 2 weeks than we saw a couple of years ago when they got off to that 13-2 start.
The people you want to pay off are paying off. That San Diego Padres trade looking great right now with Torrens looking great, France looking great. And then obviously Taylor Trammell, who is improving. There's a learning curve for him, but got a single the other day. He ended up going out on a forced out, but either way, that was nice to see. You've got some improvement yesterday from White. Dunn had a great outing for him,
Dylan
much
Moore
better than his
yard.
First. Dylan Moore did.
Good and to see. Good
so,
to see.
So again, like it's steps forward where you want to see it. I think it's important, as you noted, that two of your best bats are coming back. It's not going to be during this series. You don't know when it's going to be for Kelnick. But Lewis expected to come back soon, and that's all important. What I want to know, Curtis, is let's take a step back, take a step out of Seattle, and look at the AL West as a whole. Now, I'm going to be just brutally honest with you guys. I'm still not expecting the Mariners to contend, but there is some optimism, and I'm not going to fault someone for thinking that they potentially could, that they could push for a wild card spot, because cut one, John Morosi says the AL West, yeah, it's actually a little more winnable.
What we know is that the division is probably more winnable than we thought. And it's still very early, but the way Oakland has played early on, they look like they're not quite the same club as they were last year. Houston has really scuffled the last 5 days. And of course, now they begin this weekend series there in Seattle. So I think that, again, it's April, a little early to talk about playoffs here, but if you want to look at the contours of a story where the presumptive favorites have slipped a little bit and looked vulnerable, and Seattle's got a good club that's going to get better. And if you're worried about the outfield production, you know, obviously just wait, because the guys who are going to be able to do it are coming at some point. So it's a pretty exciting time right now for the Mariners.
It is exciting. And I look at the AL West, the landscape of it, it's starting to shift from where we saw it over the last 4 or 5 years, where it was the A's and the Astros every single time. Now, the A's, they're starting to figure it out. They got off to that 1-7 start. They looked so bad. I think they allowed 8 runs or more in each of their first 5 games. They've won 5 in a row. They're 6-7, just 2 back of the Mariners right now. The AL West is very tight. Mm-hmm. You know, there's only 2 games separating last place from first place, where the Mariners are currently.
Right. I don't know if we made that
just,
clear.
Just wanted to emphasize that point there. But there, you do kind of feel a shift in the American League West, where the Astros, they didn't re-sign George Springer. Carlos Correa declined an extension with them in hopes of hitting free agency after this season. Those are two big pieces of your puzzle that are not going to be there. They don't have Justin Verlander for this season. There are other guys that they're missing too. I don't think the Astros are going to be necessarily the juggernaut that we've seen them be. The A's, who knows what they could end up being. The Rangers are probably going to be the last place team in this division, even though they're 2 back. The Angels, I think, are the team that I'm most concerned with right now, and that stems from just how amazing Shohei Ohtani has been over the first couple weeks of the season, and that could extend further, obviously. It'll be interesting to see how much they use him on the mound, considering he's now 2 years removed from Tommy John surgery. If I'm the Mariners, I look at them as having the most upward trajectory of any team in this division, simply because of the farm system that they have.
Mm-hmm. Which is the best in the AL West.
It is. And it's second best in the American League behind Tampa Bay, who has probably the highest ranked farm system of any team in Major League Baseball.
Mm-hmm.
So there is reason for optimism that has not existed in other years with the past good starts. Because like we talked about just a little bit ago, you know, people saying, oh, it's only the Orioles. I think that stems from people kind of being burned a lot by the Mariners routinely getting off to good starts. They normally win opening day. I think they've only lost like 2 of the last like 18 opening days they've had. So good starts are not uncommon here in Seattle. What is uncommon is building off of those, and there is a very real opportunity for this ball club to do that.
This hour of Curtis and Stacy is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. It is 11:15. That means it's time for 3 questions, brought to you by Tila Mortgage.
It's time for 3 questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 11:15, 3 burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
That's the dumbest question you could ask. What?
Question 1, with the Astros coming into town, between Carlos Correa, Alex Bregman, and Jose Altuve, who's the most hateable Astro?
Give me the options again.
Jose Altuve, Alex Bregman, Carlos Correa. George Springer, he's lucky he's in Toronto.
I like Altuve because he's petite.
Well, but, I mean, there are plenty of bad petite people out there. Napoleon, you a big fan of him? He was a short guy.
Look, am I a fan of Napoleon? No. Did he accomplish a lot? Sure.
He did accomplish a lot. Much like Jose Altuve.
He accomplished a lot, yeah.
Another guy not on this list, and he won't be playing this weekend, is Justin Verlander.
Yeah.
He's gotten on his soapbox a lot.
Yeah.
But I think the guy who I'm going to say is most hateable is Alex Bregman.
Yeah.
Because that's somebody who knows he's better than a lot of players, and yet still was an active participant in the banging scheme, and has been just this cocky guy throughout his Major League Baseball career. I loved in the 2019 World Series when he was showboating, flipped his bat, and then Juan Soto got him right back, like the very next inning, doing the exact same thing.
I love
seeing guys like Alex Bregman get theirs.
Yes.
And I just cannot root for somebody like Alex Bregman.
I'm going with Bregman too. Altuve... No Astro, nor did the owner Jim Crane issue any legitimate apology for anything. I did not take anything they said as a legitimate apology or accountability, ownership of anything that happened. Altuve got the closest to me, like, so it's hard for me to hate him quite the same. I'm going to concur with Bregman. I rank it very specifically with how the level of accountability they took for the cheating scandal.
Number two.
Question two. With the Seahawks signing Alden Smith yesterday, who amongst the defensive line group finds themselves on the bubble?
That's a good question. That's a really good question. Because is there going to be enough snaps to go around for all these guys?
No. So you've got, with Alden Smith, you bring him in, and you've got eight defensive ends, not defensive linemen, eight defensive ends under contract. There are different kinds of defensive ends. Kerry Hyder isn't competing with Carlos Dunlap. They play different roles. But Carlos Dunlap, presumably Alden Smith, Benson Mayoa, Daryl Taylor, and maybe Alton Robinson, maybe Rasheem Green, are all kind of competing at the same spot.
Yeah, I think, we're going into year four for Rasheem Green.
Yes.
Has he shown you at all that he can be better than what he's been?
Now, he was your sack leader once, but it was with four sacks.
Yeah, that was the dreaded 2019 season where
everything was bad.
Yeah. Well, and then you also look at just the pass rush unit. You've also got a guy who led the team in sacks a year ago that was a defensive back.
Right.
Is Jamal Adams going to reach that level of production this year just simply because of how many good options they have at defensive end this year? I don't think he's going to reach that anymore, even though I said a couple weeks ago he would. Mm-hmm. But man, oh man, this is a really good problem to have.
It is.
Which is something that if you had told people following the Seahawks maybe 4 or 5 years ago that, hey, this defensive line could sort of be similar to what we saw in the best years of this team, I think people would gladly take that, because the last three seasons, they have pinned all of their pass rush hopes on one guy each year. Frank Clark, Jadeveon Clowney, and Carlos Dunlap. Now, everybody's got a much easier work.
And that's worked for them. Their most successful year, that was the version of what they had. They had their two primary guys with Bennett and Averill, but they also had a really healthy rotation. Yes, every team wants a guy at every position that you never want to leave the field. But you can't afford that. You cannot afford to have that guy at every position. And right now, the Seahawks either can't afford or have struck out in the draft or haven't been able to draft high enough to get that guy. So I think this is a pretty decent rotation. There is going to be someone on the outs. They are not going. I will be shocked if they carry all these guys into the year, because that also means you're going to make sacrifices with depth on the offensive line, which I would not expect them to do. They usually carry a ton of offensive linemen or potentially a defensive back. Going to your question about Adams, I think in an ideal world, the Seahawks would prefer that Adams not lead the team in sacks, particularly, and it's not the job of a strong safety to be your best coverage guy, but particularly with the potential coverage weaknesses you can have, with cornerback being not just your weakest group, but your least tested group. And by the way, you have no cornerback outside of Ugo Amadi under contract for 2022. So that's going to be your weak point. You're probably going to have some rookies in there that you're keeping on for depth. You're going to need Jamal Adams to, I would imagine, be a slightly more traditional safety in a way. I think he's capable of doing it. I don't think he gets enough credit there. I think he was called on as part of blitz packages, called on to help the pass rush. I think that they might feel that they have the answers there where they don't need to do that as much.
Number three.
Question three, back to the Mariners here. Who needs to have the biggest weekend for the M's to secure a series win over the Astros?
Looking up and down this lineup right now, I'm going to go somebody on the pitching staff.
Yeah.
I think it needs to be Justice Sheffield. For him to show that his last start is something that can be built off of, no better way to do that than going up against a division rival like the Houston Astros. You're at home. You're in your most comfortable confines. I think Justice Sheffield, if he can go seven strong innings in his start this weekend against the Houston Astros, I think that is going to be huge for this rotation going forward, where we have seen a couple of question marks pop up that we weren't anticipating at the beginning of the season. If Justice can answer those, I think we'll be in a good spot.
Okay, then I'm going to go with the lineup. But a kind of a boring answer in the lineup. I'm going to go with your leadoff guy, with Mitch Haniger, and I'm going to go with Seager. Those two guys have been a big part of the reason that you took 3 of 4 against the Orioles, and so I'm going to say that it's safe to assume they're going to continue to be a big part of the reason against the upcoming pitching staffs, particularly with the Dodgers. I know, Curtis, you pointed this out. They're not going to have their best guys out there, but you're still going to need to get runs. Like, you're still going to need your power hitters to be great. And so I'm going to go Haniger and Seager. I guess if I have to pick one over the other, I'd love to see Seager have a great series or at least one or two great games coming up here. So I'll take some guys in the lineup there.
By the way, how refreshing is it to see Kyle Seager get off to a hot start?
You know I love that for the 80s babies.
Well, I mean, he's putting on for the olds. What can I say?
Okay. It is refreshing. It's incredibly refreshing. And, you know, I'm not saying that being called underpaid is motivating him, but it sure probably feels good.
Oh, anytime you can stick it to somebody, it's the best feeling in the world.
Absolutely. Now, we are going to keep this conversation going because we have a very exciting series, a very beautiful weekend coming up. I cannot wait to watch baseball. And Groz can't either. He'll be joining us next to help us preview this series. Do not go anywhere.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
The Groz joining us right now, brought to you by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer. First of all, Groz, how are you? Happy Friday.
Happy Friday, right back at you. I'm like everyone else, just looking in. Longing to be outside.
Okay, thank you, because that's actually where my question's going to start. It's absolutely beautiful outside, and I'm in a great mood today. I just got a new blazer, so that could be part of it. But what I'm wondering,
nice.
Groz, is it just me being excited that has me excited for the Mariners, or is there kind of a reason that we can feel like it's a promising start?
Oh, I think you should definitely feel like it's a promising start. And you know, the next couple of weeks will tell a lot more. I mean, the schedule looks pretty interesting coming up with a bunch of games against Houston, who may or may not be as good as they've been in the past. Boston, who also happens to be in first place. And the Dodgers, who are, I think, 11-2, are the two-game series with them coming up. So we'll see in the next month what they look like. But this is different than the 13-2 start of a couple of years ago, which you knew was a fluke. And, you know, they had a bunch of, I hate to say the word, but I'll call it retreads and guys that weren't going to be around and weren't a part of what they were doing. Where what you're seeing here, I mean, Justin Dunn yesterday, Marco Gonzalez, the way Haniger's hitting, you know, these are guys that they're planning on building with. So it's a good feeling to be in first place, especially when the sun gets warm for the first time this spring.
Groz, you mentioned just how great the weather is going to be this weekend, but also an incredible matchup for this Mariners team facing the Astros, a team that a lot of fans in this town have some bloodlust for after their banging scheme from a couple seasons ago. Groz, you've seen everything in Seattle sports over the last, what, 3-4 decades. Can you remember a time where a fan base here has been so eagerly anticipating an opportunity to boo someone the way we're probably going to see it tonight with the 9,000 at T-Mobile when they give it to the Astros?
Well, the Alex Rodriguez one is the one that immediately comes to mind and will probably not be matched. That one was truly personal. I think, you know, the slight difference between this one and that one is that unfortunately during this time the Mariners weren't contenders, so it wasn't like the Astros necessarily cost them a championship or anything like that. That doesn't change the fact that I think you're definitely right. People are going to be out there reacting to it. But Alex Rodriguez, people took very personally, whether it was right or wrong. They showered dollar bills, you know, and fake money as well. That game, I'll never forget that game. So it won't quite match the bitterness of that, which Mariner fans took personally. But you know, this is one where like everyone else, you get for Seattle, of course, it's the first chance to ride guys who were caught cheating.
Hey, out of curiosity, while we're just on this line of thinking, what's like the most hostile game environment you've been in?
Here?
Anywhere.
Anywhere.
Oh, man. Probably, I would say Yankee Stadium, and I'm trying to think of the particular Red Sox game.
Ooh.
Because I was back there in the 70s, so it was almost any Red Sox game. 95, when the Mariners came there, was unbelievable. Because that was the first time they'd been in the playoffs for 15 years, the Yankees. Mm-hmm. So they hadn't been in since 81, and they went absolutely nuts. They were throwing batteries on the field.
What is this, Philly?
Swearing at Griffey, and it was really unbelievable. What'd you say, Stace?
I said, what is this, Philly? Don't Eagles fans throw batteries all the time?
If they do, they learned it from New York. I mean, it was insane. It was insane. It was Bleep You Junior was a chant, and it was loud, and it was everyone involved. So normally I would say the most hostile environments I've been in have been in New York and around the Yankees.
Graz, big move made yesterday by the Seahawks, finalizing their signing with Aldon Smith, who's, you know, been around the NFL. He's had a checkered past as well. But you look at the defensive end rotation the Seahawks are rolling out this year. Do you get vibes similar to what we saw maybe 2013, 2014 with the pass rush rotation, what it was then and what we're seeing now with guys like Aldon Smith, Benson Mayoa, Carlos Dunlap, Alton Robinson, Rasheem Green, the list goes on. What do you make of this Seahawks pass rush rotation and where it stands right now?
You said it, Curtis. I mean, this is definitely the deepest rotation they have had since that glory time, and it's not that long ago, and everyone can remember how incredibly effective it was for them. I mean, the funny part about that was Michael Bennett and Cliff Averill, who came in, were both really, really reluctant to be involved in something like that, and were complaining about being pulled out at first. About 10 or 11 games in, they kind of realized, hey, this is not only working, but I'm feeling a lot better on Monday and Tuesday getting ready for the week. And that's another one of the big payoffs of this is you keep guys fresh for the entire season. So this is a tried and tested routine for the Seahawks to be effective. It's worked for them in the past. And yeah, I agree with the story I saw today that talked about some of the cuts might be a little bit difficult for the first time because they do have a deep rotation of guys, and I would expect that they're looking forward to using them.
Do you think Jamal Adams is a question Curtis asked. Do you think Jamal Adams is going to be quite as involved with the pass rush since they have all these guys?
You know, Stace, it's a great question because they really were on to something unique last year. I mean, had he not missed those games, he probably would have had double-digit sacks, significantly. And I was kind of wondering, I remember doing a piece about, is this going to be a change for all teams in the NFL? Are you going to now see guys, because of the speed that a guy like Jamal Adams has, are you going to see those guys rushing the passer more often? And will this be kind of a new position, sort of like Lawrence Taylor created with his pass rushing outside linebacker of the year? He had 20 sacks when they really cut him loose. So, I mean, to answer your question, I think that they're still going to use Jamal Adams the way that they got him, and I still think he'll be very effective in the pass rush. I don't think this is going to take that much away from him.
Graz, we're going to be talking about two guys on this Mariners roster coming up here that – they have been on this team for a while, Kyle Seager and Mitch Haniger, and they've been the two best bats throughout the first 2 weeks of the season. Let's say we're nearing July 31st, and the Mariners are still kind of hovering around 500. What do you think they do with those two guys?
Good one, Curtis. I mean, I think that if they're around 500 and they're not in the race, because I do think that one of the things the Mariners have got to be willing to do this year and will be willing to do this year is, if they're in the race, you know, not say, well, we're a year early and we're not going to do anything about it, but do something about it. I think there are two different cases. I would think that if they're not in the race, Seager, if he's still having a good year, would be a guy that they'd consider trading. I think Haniger they'd like to hang on to, although, I mean, I can understand the reasons for wanting to trade him. But, boy, you look at the first 2 weeks and you see the reasons for wanting to keep him, too. Mm-hmm. So I think that I'd be more likely inclined to think that they would hang on to Haniger and try and move Seager, who now is a contract is nowhere near as onerous as it looked a few years ago. But if they're in the race, I would not expect them to move either one of those guys, and I would expect them to be aggressive at the trade deadline, which is the first time we've seen it in a while.
Going from two of the hottest bats to one that's been struggling, at least at the plate, it's Evan White. Now, he's still been great on defense, and I will say he had a better outing in this last doubleheader against the Orioles, but I think that you certainly hope that you'll see more improvement from him. Graz, you've been covering this game, and you know more than anyone I can think of what to watch for with these guys. What do you see when Evan White steps up to the plate?
I think what you want to see, and you're not seeing it, is just hitting line drives, is looking more confident in the count. I mean, he just does not have confidence at the plate. And I'm not saying he's just up there, you know, without a plan. He's got a plan. He just does not look like he's got particular faith in his plan. So I think what you're looking for is to see him start hitting line drives. You know, if they're caught, they're caught. But just hitting the ball well. Look, we knew that this guy's defense was way ahead of where his bat is and was. And so it's not that surprising to see it. He was, just as you pointed out, Stacey, just tremendous defensively last year and is so again this year. And look, if you've got other guys picking up the slack, you can always – when the Mariners were in their glory days – you know, in the late 90s and whatnot. I mean, you had Dan Wilson for a lot of years. He had some good years at the plate, but he also had some years where he really wasn't that good at the plate. But it didn't matter. If he caught the ball well, the way he handled that pitching staff was sensational. The way he was a defensive catcher was sensational. You had other guys who could pick up the slack on offense. And even though Evan White's at a position where you normally expect quite a bit of offense at first base, you kind of could be in that position with him as well, because I don't see his bat necessarily catching up this year to where it's got to be, and I think it's going to take him a few years. But if they have other guys hitting well and he's doing a great job defensively, it's a bat you can carry.
It's the Graz. Graz, we always love talking to you, and we thank you for taking the time today. Enjoy some Mariners baseball, and enjoy this beautiful weather this weekend.
Yeah.
You guys too. Thank you.
Thanks, Graz.
All right. Curtis just brought this question up when we were talking to Graz, and you guys are going to think it's a weird one, but hear me out. Seager and Haniger are your two best players in the lineup right now. Is that a good thing or is it a bad thing? That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
We are taking you around the diamond thanks to the Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. The Mariners open a three-game series against the Houston Astros tonight at T-Mobile Park. Pre-game shows at 6 p.m., first pitch at 7:10 p.m. right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. But don't forget to stay tuned in after us, since Wyman and Bob are on site live at the ballpark all day. And that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by the Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. This hour of Jake and Stacey, starring Curtis Rogers, is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. I asked you guys to weigh in on a question. Kyle Seager and Mitch Haniger are your two best players in the lineup right now. Is this a good thing or bad thing? Here's why I'm asking, Curtis, and then I'm going to throw it to you. The Mariners are coming up on a decision about both of these guys, and neither one is guaranteed to be here with you next year. Not only that, but if you were to ask Mariners fans at the close of 2020, who do you want to be the two hottest bats in your lineup? One of them would have been Kyle Lewis. The other one maybe would have been Mitch Haniger, maybe Seager, maybe France. But it's two bats we could have seen being great, but you'd hope that also some of your young guys are in there, or that guys that are going to be here for sure in the future are two of them. So, good thing, bad thing? How are you feeling about it?
I think it's definitely a good thing that they are playing not only to their baseball card, but a little bit beyond that as well. Haniger has been incredible atop the lineup, and that was something that we had kind of sort of anticipated a couple weeks ago when asked, you know, if Haniger is the best option at the top of the lineup for this team, and clearly that has been the case. You know, he's hitting at like 321. He's been just absurdly good at the top of the lineup. It is good right now. Will it still be good if this is the case in June or July? Maybe not so much, but these are guys that not only can help you now to win, but I think there is still plenty of value from them that can help you down the road. You look at Kyle Seager. He has a team option on his deal right now for $15 million next year. Now, a couple of years ago, would we have wanted that picked up? Probably not. But Kyle Seager, $15 million for what he brings to the table at a premium position, third base, that is very affordable for what his level of production is, mm-hmm. especially across Major League Baseball. You look at some of these contracts that teams are paying players, you're paying guys upwards of $30, $35, $40 million. You look at Nolan Arenado, the deal that Colorado gave him, and then they traded him to St. Louis. I mean, yeah, Arenado is one of the best third basemen in all of baseball, but Seager is probably making, what, a third of what he's making? So just to get that level of production at a very affordable rate, and there's not a lot of contracts on the books for the Mariners beyond this season, I think picking up his option right now is probably the most no-brainer decision outside of promoting Jared Kelnick at some point this season.
Some of the feedback echoing your sentiment, Curtis. The 206 says, so it probably is bad that Seager and Haniger are your best two. That's where Kelnick and Julio should come in a couple years. It's your potential MVP candidates of the future. So saying, like, you know, neither of these guys are up yet. So it's not the worst thing in the world, but you would hope that those two don't remain your best bats for a while. That being echoed by the 206 saying, I think preferably you hope your ranking of best players in 2 years is Julio, Kelnick, Lewis, Haniger, Seager. If you go get Corey Seager or Correa, stick them at the top of that list. And they add, and yeah, I'm a Julio over Kelnick kind of girl.
That's not,
no hate.
Hey, no hate
no
at
hate.
All. That's a very fair opinion
Toss
to
up.
Have. We'll always allow that. I look at, though, what was said in the offseason about Kyle Seager from Kevin Mather, the former president, the since resigned president of the Mariners, saying that he was overpaid and that, you know, he doesn't have really a future here. But I think he does. I think there is a spot for him on the 2022 Mariners roster simply because look at the pipeline. There's really nobody challenging for that third base job in the minor leagues. Mm-hmm. Noelvi Marte is probably going to be a middle infielder at some point, and he's still 2-3 years away from really having that kind of impact on the organization. Ty France maybe is a third baseman. Maybe.
And that's being...
That's being generous.
We're not taking away
no.
from Ty. He can really hit
He can
France.
Really hit. There's a reason his nickname is He Can Really Hit, because it's not He Can Really Feel.
Look, Ty, a lot of us are good at maybe only one thing, like handwriting, and not good at anything else, like being on time for our jobs.
That, I mean...
I'm just kidding.
You're
I'm just
speaking
saying some
for
people
yourself?
Might feel that way. No.
No?
Yeah.
Not?
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay. Well, DJ and I were here on time this morning. Anyway, but yeah, Ty France, probably not your third baseman of the future. Now, if he's your DH of the future, that's more than fine. He is a bat worthy of playing as a DH every single day. If you can get some kind of value out of him, whether it be at first base, second base, or third base, sure. But I would not be comfortable playing him every single day at third base. You know who I am comfortable playing every single day at third base? Kyle Seager.
That's exactly right. All right, we have Michael Bumpus coming up here next. Then we have the timeline. In the timeline, I am very recently adding some news that I just saw on TMZ Sports. A couple Washington football team season ticket holders have been given lists of team names to vote on. Not every list is the same. I think they're randomizing it. One of those names, the Demon Cats.
Beg pardon?
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's coming up in the timeline at 12:30. Michael Bumpus is next, going to be asking him about Alden Smith, whether he can be a difference maker, what that pass rush rotation is going to look like, who the odd man out can be, is KJ Wright going to stay here, all kinds of Seahawks questions, including some draft questions with that coming up later this month. Michael Bumpus joining us next.